The In-Between, written by Adapt to Everything 34, read by Frog Show Anon. Summary. There's a girl underneath the castle. She doesn't know where she is or what's happening, but she does know what her best friends sound like. After all, they're right there with her. Why wouldn't they be? Down in the trenches of a floating castle, there's a secret waiting to be seen. Past the cracked stone stairs and the beautiful ghosts who disintegrate everything they touch, on the same floor the moss men wander, trapped just like the spirits in the coffins floating in the abandoned basement trenches. At least, that's what the newts who are useful enough to be kept around say. They glance around with their frightened glances and whisper of orange eyes staring at them unblinkingly in the dark, of the worst horrors imaginable springing to their mind as soon as they dare to take a step closer, if only to see their former ranger one last time. Deep beneath the floors of the castle, where no one but he who is feared and he who rules dares to go, floats Mercy Wu. Some say they must have been hallucinating. She looks like a ghost now, her gentle face hollowed and illuminated by sickly orange light. Bubbles rise around her in a slow pattern, as if her life itself has been delayed. Perhaps it has, for rumor has it that she died when the castle rose into the sky that first day. A violent betrayal from a supposedly kind king. He has no advisor now, no flipboard champion, no child running around the halls. And she is stagnant. Nobody knows when time will unfreeze for her. It's so cold. Anne and Sasha should be here. They must have stolen all the blankets again. Anne especially has a tendency of doing that, even if she doesn't mean to. At least when she notices, she pulls Mercy to her. It's so cold. She can't move. But that's okay. Anne and Sasha are here. She can practically feel them putting a blanket around her, wrapping their arms around her. It's better to share body heat that way. And they are. Sasha moves close to her without a word. Mercy can feel her gentle breaths across her collarbone, the way she holds onto her so firmly in an iron grip, like someone will steal Mercy away from her in her sleep. Of course, that won't happen, but Mercy doesn't mind. It's secure. Sasha's always been so strong. Then there's Anne wrapping around her back, her nose just barely resting against Marcy's neck. She laughs, and the sound reverberates. She can't think of anything that's really that funny right now, but the sound is like wind chimes, and Mercy wants it to echo in your ears for as long as the wind can blow. "I can tell you're awake, Mercy," she whispers, giggling, and Mercy curls her face into a hint of a grin the best that she can. Her words ghost over her skin. "Go to sleep. We'll be here in the morning, whenever you're ready to wake up. Are you sure?" It's so cold, but the harshness of it is fading away. It must be their body heat, or the heaviness behind her eyes. Maybe both. "Of course I am, Marbles. Right, Sasha?" Sasha makes some kind of noncommittal noise and nods against her. The mumbles she lets out are so quiet, Mercy doesn't know what she's saying. "Shh," Anne whispers. She reaches over for just a moment, and Mercy feels a warm kiss being pressed to her cheek. It lingers for a bit longer than it probably should have, but Mercy doesn't have the energy to question it. "It's okay. Anne wraps herself back around Marcy, holding her even more firmly than before. Marcy's breaths shudder and slow as the world fades away from her. The only thing that remains is the feeling of Anne and Sasha pressed around her. They're here, so she's safe, right? Of course she is. They've always been her protectors. In fact, she can't quite place why she might need to feel safe in the first place. Most of the amphibians in the castle weren't there to ever witness what happened in the throne room. When they step in, with quiet words and cautious glances, the first thing they take in is the sight of the shattered remains of the beautiful muraled panes. The orange and yellow shards still lie abandoned on the floor, all of the windows broken in perfect synchronicity. There's a burn mark on the floor, a sudden semicircle of ashen tile, like a warning over at the back of the room. There's craters the size of small asteroids, or maybe just a wave of grief made physical. Andreas asks, demands, someone to clean the throne room one day, and it's gone like nothing ever happened. The glass panes are replaced, the burns washed away, the holes filled in with new material that's been sapped straight from the dry earth below. Don't ask, don't tell, don't say a word. Nobody knows anything. Chief Ranger Marcy Wu never existed. This is it. This is the day. And it's so silly, honestly, because middle school's version of prom is not prom whatsoever. It's a mockery, merely a simplification of the famous high school trope. But Marcy holds a poster in her shaky hands anyways. She's never been one for romance. That's Anne's thing, with her magazines and movies and ridiculous love triangle TV shows. But maybe if she could just get up the courage. Of course, she's accounted for both probabilities. They don't need to know what either option means, but they're best friends. She feels uneasy. There's something roiling in her stomach. Of course they'll go to this mock prom together, whether as friends or something else. She just needs to find them first. The hallways have always been so awkwardly freezing. Maybe it's all the metal lockers and the lack of doors to the outside world, or the tiles under her feet, or the buildup of something thick in her throat, blocking her words, making her want to turn back. She clutches the paper harder, the sound of her shoes echoing. She gasps like a drowning fish, desperate to say something, anything, but the words won't come, and the poster threatens to slip out of her grasp. Why is this so hard? They're holding hands at the end of the hallway, fingers interlaced, standing so close together she can't tell where one of their uniforms ends and the other begins. Oh, and that's fine. The way they've always seemed closer to each other than they've ever been to her. That's fine. She can handle that. It's nothing new. Just as long as she doesn't mess this up. Just as long as they want her. Just... They turn around at the same time, and their faces, fraught with the look of seeing something they didn't want to see, are enough to make the poster slip out of Marcy's hands. It flutters to the floor. Sasha steps forward and picks it up. Really? She asks, her voice low, disappointed. The type she uses on people she thinks are stupid, who have made bad decisions, who she never considers anything more than an obstacle, an annoyance. What is this? She means to explain, but nothing comes out. Even if it could, it'd be nothing more than useless stammering apologies. You didn't think we actually liked you in that way, right? Anne asks, her eyes glancing over the poster dismissively. Why would we? Why would we want anything to do with you? Her face changes. For a moment, Marcy is plunged into an awful scene she feels like she shouldn't remember. She reaches her hands out to them, pleadingly, and both Sasha and Anne snatch themselves away as if they'd been burned, their faces lined with betrayal. They hold on to each other instead. They've always been meant to be together. Harshness and gentleness, sneers and smiles, two swords versus one, hands interlaced, drinking smoothies at a place Marcy has never been to, talking about things Marcy will never relate to. She's known this. She's always wanted both of them. Always both. Always, always, always. Today and tomorrow and forever. But she can't bring herself to fight a battle she knows she's already lost. The Greeks say that when the gods created humans, they had four arms, four legs, and when they were split apart, they were to spend the rest of eternity looking for their other half. No one ever said anything about a missing third. Sasha and Anne rip up the prom poster, two hands on each side. Nowadays, Andreas's voice carries across the halls. The few who are left, the loyal ones, the ones who haven't cracked under the grief of seeing their world torn asunder, have learned to ignore his words. He's never talking to them, after all. He never takes off his crown, and nobody has attempted to steal it either. He's the ultimate authority, one who controls the metal amalgamations with guns. The one who towers over every other being in his presence. He isn't meant to be questioned, not even when he whispers of armies and universes collapsing and begs on his knees in the shadows of the throne room for something to hear him out just this one time, please. The newts in the castle have learned to stay away from the throne room by now, and when passing by the robots, a simple nod will suffice. Just a couple more weeks, he booms, wringing his giant knuckled hands. Just a couple more weeks. I assure you, my lord, she is not. Yes, that was my fault, but I insist. I do not want you to have a host that is not up to your standards. She needs to heal. Please, just a couple more weeks. The resounding sigh that comes afterwards echoes down the empty halls of the palace. The newts who have managed to remain brace themselves for the sound of a heavy tail smashing into whatever large column it can find.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I never wanted. Please.
There's a fire in her chest, and she's reaching out. It's so cold, and she's made every mistake a person can make, and she knows this as inherently as she knows her own name, as she knows the way Anne's eyes shone with unshed tears when she betrayed her.
I never meant to hurt you. Please, come back. I didn't want to hurt you. I just wanted to be together. I know I was wrong. I know it was wrong. I know I can't be forgiven. Just one last time. I'm so sorry.
All she can see is Anne's face, illuminated by soft glowing light. All she can hear is Sasha's voice screaming her name.
I'm sorry for everything.
And again.
I'm sorry for everything.
That is what she said. And maybe it'll never be enough. She just needs them to hear her. Just needs them to look at her and acknowledge that she'd do anything for them, just.
I'm sorry for everything. I can't make things right, but please just know that I regret it. Just know that I love you.
Shh. There's a hand at her face now, gently tracing their fingers over her cheek. They're warm and soft and familiar, and probably wiping a tear or two from her eyes as well.
It's okay. It's okay. We know.
What?
We know, Marcy. It's all right. Don't you remember what Anne said about going to sleep? There's a pair of arms around her now, she realizes. Arms that are holding tighter than they ever were before. But it's not forceful. It's just worry. The kind of hug you do when you don't want to lose someone. Anne's breaths are shaky against the back of her neck. Did she do that? Did she cause her to worry?
We love you too. You don't need to apologize. We know. We heard it the first time. We love you, Marcy. That's not going to change. Not ever. Even if we're separated for years, or if you're gone, or if we never see you again, we'll never stop thinking of you. I promise. We could never forget you.
Sasha's voice is broken down by now into shaky breaths and held back sobs. And all Marcy wants to do is reach up and pull her into her arms, bury her face into her hair, and tell them that they can go back to sleep and everything's going to be okay. But she can't. It's too cold for that. Her limbs refuse to move.
I'm so sorry, Marcy.
The heaviness behind her eyes returns.
You don't have to be. Why are you apologizing? I was the one who hurt you and Anne.
Sasha clings onto her and sobs into her shoulder, desperate.
I don't.
Her words get cut off in the wake of her tears. It's the last thing Marcy hears before the darkness takes her away again.
Sashi? Anne?
She could have sworn that was them. They would be here, right? They were right there. They promised they'd be there when she woke up, and she's pretty sure she's awake, so where are they? They are right next to her, and...
Ow!
Ow! Apparently, she wasn't as awake as she thought. Yunin, what do you think? It's better we get out of here, my lady, Yunin mumbles, picking up Olivia like she weighs nothing and seating her on the last bird they could find. She hops into the saddle right in front of her, weary and bruised, and Olivia does her best to be gentle when she wraps her arms around her from behind. If the king finds us, we're screwed. He probably already has a dozen robots tracking our location.
What about Marcy? We can't just leave her.
Yes, we can. Yunin's voice snaps forcefully, and she grumbles, mumbling an apology under her breath.
Did you see that thing? That wasn't her. There's no going back for her now.
Yunin!
Olivia says, nearly growling.
We're not going back for her until we have more information. We can't just give up on her. She's a child.
Did you not just hear what I...
If we can't help her, then we'll find someone who can.
Olivia insists. Yunin sighs loudly.
She's in danger. You're a general.
Are you saying you're afraid?
Yunin is silent for a moment. Whatever word she intended to say in retort get lost in her throat.
Fine. I'm afraid. That's not an easy thing for me to admit.
Yunin tugs on the bird's reins, and it goes just a bit faster as the sound of lasers echoes in the background.
I'm afraid of losing someone else. Right now, I have you, and we don't have Marcy. But, fine. If you're right, and there's someone who knows how to help, then we'll go back. But not until it's safe. Not until it's guaranteed that we can get out alive. Sound reasonable, my lady?
Okay. Olivia rests her head against the back of Yunin's chest plate. The general doesn't say a word.
Oh, Wit. Keep that hope with you. It sets you apart from the others. After all, a host is only as strong as their will to survive.
The end. Thanks for listening.